You're listening to the Cash and Burn podcast, and I'm your host, Brandon Metcalf. Join me as I interview and have conversations with founders and leaders about the greatest obstacles and challenges they've faced while building their businesses. Learn how they overcame them and ultimately what made them successful. The podcast is brought to you by Place. Place is a B2B SaaS customer subscription management, billing, forecasting, and metrics platform powered by Salesforce. Growing SaaS businesses use Place to better align their revenue and finance teams so they can boost revenue growth and retention, manage renewals, collect cash faster, and make more informed decisions all directly inside of Salesforce. Hey everyone, welcome back to Cash and Burn. Today I have Ryan Staley, the CEO and founder of Whale Boss. Hey Ryan, how are you?
What's happening, Brandon? Excited to be on.
Excited. We're doing my show, and then I get to do your show. So we've got a lot of talk time today that we're going to be recording. So we should be full of energy, I think.
I'm spending more time with Brandon today than my wife. So you've got that to look forward to.
Well, why don't you tell the audience who you are and your background and what you're up to?
Yeah. So real quick background on me is I've had every character building job within the sales realm throughout my entire career, right? Starting from like door to door selling advertising at my early days in college to becoming like an SDR before SDRs were called SDRs. So it was inside sales where it made $250 a day, then went into complex sales, then went into management. And then with some ups and downs, eventually ended up in leadership, being a VP and a partner. And then what happened was, you know, just to kind of backstop, I mean, like, and we'll get into this a little bit later, but yeah, a lot of ups and downs. It's not a linear climb for that, right? However, like, I was always focused and obsessed with outcomes in my career. And so one of the things that always happened, I noticed that sometimes I was a slow starter, but then I ended up performing the best out of everybody, right? So I kind of sucked initially, but then became one of the best producers. And so like, it's funny, I was actually talking to my son about this the other day. It's just like, hey, it's okay. And it's good to struggle sometimes because that's what defines who you are, right? So fast forward a little bit later as we pass down, I was tasked after a demotion to basically start an enterprise group from scratch. And it was because of the fact that I was identified as being really good at working complex, big deals. And so started that with no team and really almost had to win the trust of my team back. And essentially what happened is grew that from zero to 30 million in ARR in about 5.5 years with only 4 salespeople. We had no marketing. And then we added another 30 million in about 25 million, I should say, in expansion business on top of that in a 2.5 year stretch. So that took me to finish off my last job in the corporate world, started my own business after my previous employer wasn't a big fan of me working on some stuff outside of work. And then it was awesome because baby bird got pushed out of the nest and was forced to start his own business, which I've been doing for 3 years. And so I've been basically working with either CROs or SaaS CEOs on how to implement the principles that got those results. And as a byproduct of that, I got the hunker. And after doing that, having a podcast, talking to SaaS CEOs like you all the time, I'm like, you know, this SaaS thing sounds kind of cool. I should build one as well, right? And you can't really see me if you're listening to this only, like my forehead literally got 2 inches bigger from the time in which I decided to make that process. And that's kind of where we're at today, man.
Yeah, I had no gray hair before I started in SaaS, and now there's quite a bit of it, and it's falling out. So I feel your pain on that. Well, what is, like, so the name of your company, Whale Boss, so like, tell us like who's the ICP, what's the target, like really what you do on a day-to-day there.
Yeah, no problem. So there's a couple things, right? And so one of the things I would say, the folks that I've noticed that I provide the most value for kind of range in that 5 million to 100 million range, which sounds like a big range, which it is, right? But one of the unique problems that I've seen that are consistent in that entire range without the red tape of once you get over 100 million, there's a lot more red tape to deal with. And so one of the unique problems that I saw happen repeatedly is the fact that of pipeline creation, right? Is this consistent pipeline with the top of your ICP, the top 20% of your ICP, which I call your PCP. And so what I've been doing is I've been helping founders really, really focus on two core things. One is basically creating a podcast to consistently meet with their top like customers and prospects that they want to meet with. And so I did that with one founder. She was about $2.5 million in revenue and got $500,000 in pipeline before she even launched the show, right? So that's one aspect. And then the other aspect, which I'm really passionate about, is leveraging a referral-led growth motion. And so what I mean by that is systemizing customer and prospect referrals into pipeline. And I'm a person that's obsessed with not wasting time. And I'm kind of obsessed with Pareto's principle as well, the 80-20 rule, right? And so one of the things that I've seen with referrals is that you could essentially, if you get referred into a deal, it's exponentially easier than a cold opportunity. It closes at a rate of about 150% of a normal deal would, and it's faster, right? And you have a lot more fun doing it. So we actually got referred into a $20 million deal from a prospect that we lost to. And what I saw in the real world is that after I left there, not that I wasn't in the real world, but real world outside of that, is that it's not something that companies implement and they kind of forget about it. And it's kind of like the equivalent, Brandon, of like you focus on the first sale, but then you don't sell any expansion or upsell revenue after. It's the same kind of idea with pipeline. So,
yeah. And it's interesting too, like the referral piece is a good sign that you've reached product market fit. Like I've talked a lot openly, like at a place we started off doing financial forecasting, and it really just wasn't the right fit for the audience and or for the demographic we were trying to sell to. And then we rolled out revenue recognition and billing. We're still there, but not there. And then last year we rolled out the ability to manage subscriptions and do this all inside of Salesforce. And all of a sudden, like everything started to switch for us. Like conversations were different. The average sales price was different. The impact that we could make was different. But then from the customers that were winning, we started to see like the real ROI we could produce. And like one of the clients we sold to, their contract was like $30,000 a year. And as soon as they turned us on, they found $45,000 in billing that they hadn't billed because Salesforce and Stripe were disconnected. And, you know, there's a lot of stories that we're having now that with these customers. But then over the past 190 days, 120 days, we've seen customers actively referring us other people that they know. And it's usually other companies that are in the same portfolio with their VC, which is super exciting because to your point, those deals are way easier to close because typically the people that are coming to you, I think, one, understand better what the opportunity is for you to help them. And then you also have someone that they know, like giving you some credibility to get into it. But the exciting part is like the understanding that people can see what the value you offer to them is well enough to recommend other people to it. And I think that is one of the like biggest signs of, okay, you probably have product market fit, at least for now. And I think product market fit changes as you go. So I think that's awesome.
Thanks, man. I love what you said. Like if you're like getting inbound referrals, like what you're talking, like this is perfect. Cause it's just like, what do you do when something's working well? You lean into it more and leverage it, right? So anyways, I think you nailed it, man.
And then the podcast thing, like, you know, me launching Cash and Burn almost a year ago, at least I've got 50 something episodes recorded now. It was never my idea. I love it. It's kind of one of the most fun parts of all the stuff that I do because I get to talk to other people like you and who are like me, and we're kind of all in this together. But we did it like you were talking about for pipeline creation. Like we, at a place we sell to B2B SaaS companies. So I'm constantly having execs and founders on from SaaS companies to talk about really what it's like to run a SaaS company. And it's just immensely rewarding for me because on days that I feel beat up or like things are going rough, if I have one of these podcasts or if I listen to one of the episodes I recorded, I'm like, okay, a lot of this stuff is just normal. Like it's hard doing what we do and it's good to hear it from someone else.
You nailed it, man. Like it's such a good point because like, here's what I would tell you is like, it happened on accident for my podcast. I was kind of like you were, I was just curious at first. I'm like, oh, this would be awesome. And then when it started happening, I started organically getting customers through this. And I'm like, this is like an unused, like, I don't want to say nuclear missile, but like massive weapon that companies are not leveraging. Because you could get, here's the thing, like, and you probably see this, you get access to anybody. Like if as long as you're professional, you got a good show and you got to level up, right? You don't start with like billion-dollar companies to start, but it's not that hard, and people love promoting themselves. So it's built into human nature of like a flywheel, and people are appreciative to be on the show. So anyways.
Yeah, I got pushback from one of my investors recently. They were like, you know, where are you spending your time? Like, is a podcast really worth your time? How much time does it take? And it does take quite a bit of time. Like, we do a weekly show, so there's effort that goes into it, and, you know, attracting the guest and then recording and all of that and then editing. But the value is like, you know, it's hard to typically quantify how many leads you get from the actual show, at least in my experience. But it's not hard to quantify the value of the content that you're putting out, because you constantly hear it from the people that are in the audience type that you want to be in front of. And it's just an awareness thing. And it gives the opportunity to talk about a lot of the stuff that I think we help companies with just organically on the show. So I highly recommend the investment, but you got to make a good show. It can't be boring, and it's got to be relevant, and it can't just be a sales pitch. So speaking of all that stuff, I want to get into the good stuff with you then. So, you know, the theme of the show is we talk about stories of challenges and setbacks and how you overcame them to get to where you're at now. So, I mean, what are some things that come to mind in your experience?
So I've embraced the suck a lot. As I told you, like I never really started off like amazing at things. Like I was like, even if you go back to sports, like I was like a third string player or second string player in football. And I was better when I was younger, but people just matured faster than me, right? But I was super gritty. And so then, you know, by the end of second half freshman year, I became a starter in high school. And then sophomore, I was a starter. And then I was a starter in my senior year on a nationally ranked team, the one state. And then I got a grant for college. And that was all born out of like I was one of the weakest people to start. I wasn't fast. I'm you know, so anyways, my point is that translated sometimes into business too. And there was like three critical events. And I know you and I spoke about these, which was great. I think one of them, when my wife was pregnant with our first child in 2009, was like right after the crash happened. I was selling a nice to have solution. So I was selling enterprise mobile applications in 2009, right after the crash. So as you can imagine, that was in the nice to have category. I think when I was at the company I was at for 2 years, I don't think we sold a new customer the entire time, right? There was some add-on business of things that were in process before that, but that just kind of shapes it up. So anyways, it was a great learning experience. It sucked at the time because it was the first time like up to that point where I didn't really, and I was thinking it was like around 30-ish, like early 30s with that, where I failed, right? I just flat out failed. I mean, I failed at other stuff, but in the work career, I always found a way to like just make it happen, right? Through sheer grit and determination. I remember I was sitting there, I'm just like, stuff's not going good. Like, other people aren't going good. I was looking at something on our website and I saw a job posting for my job, which just sucks. Right. But I called my boss out. I'm like, hey, so it looks like we're hiring for this Midwest. We had another position. What's going on? Right. So, you know, obviously that had a limited shelf life. And so I knew the end was near on that. And so real interesting. I got laid off. Had some really strong, like, I didn't know this either, like non-compete things integrated in the agreement, which now that I know a lot of them were probably BS, right? But at the time, so I'm like, shit, I got to change gears again, right? So then I got recruited by an old boss that I worked for to a company that he started working for that bought the old company that I left. He's like, things are different now. Everything's amazing, right? So I'm like, well, there's a reason why I left there, but this guy was an amazing mentor. So, you know, went back. Needless to say, that lasted only 9 months, right? So I went from like not jumping jobs at all to getting fired, not once, but twice right there, right? And then another person that I used to work with called me up out of the blue. I remember I was like grilling on the porch. And this is right after that last job happened, because basically it was 9 months in and they're like, wanted me once again to sell enterprise. They're like, why haven't you closed anything yet? And I'm like, there's no structure in place. There's no SDR. I mean, there's no legion, no market, nothing. They're like, you know, 9 months for an enterprise sales with like no momentum starting from zero is hard, right? And it takes time. So anyways, from there, I got recruited into another position where I was in leadership, right? So it was a good opportunity and was basically tasked to start a, like, not, there's already a team in place, but like they had two managers there. They failed already. The person who was interviewing me, the office was so bad. It was above like a Jimmy John's in Chicago. And so they're like, hey, let's just meet at Starbucks, right? And I didn't really put two and two together, but like he never met with me in the office. And so he's like, we're working on a new office. We're getting a new office. So anyways, and I didn't know at the time, they're like, well, if I didn't work out, they were going to shut down the entire office, right? So needless to say, got it to work out. Was selling managed services to mid-market. Got some great traction, started producing really good results, created the company into one of the top performing offices in the country, right? And then what happened was like, I kept getting pushed to do more and more and more and more from the founder, right? And so what happened was I basically got to the point where I was working, I don't know, probably 70 hours a week. Every time I had a free moment, I was working. I now had two little kids, right? And it all kind of came to a head when a few things happened, right? I came home from work one day and my daughter was like 3 at the time. And I was traveling so much. I was always in the office. Like I wasn't around when she was awake. And so like, I went to give her a hug and she like, didn't want to give me a hug. Right. She didn't like want to be by me because she didn't really know me, you know? And so that was a really eye-opening moment that I needed to reframe what I was doing and like approach life a little bit differently. And so, so that was the big thing. And then, I started to pull back, got demoted, and then got tasked to start the enterprise group. So I'll pause for a second because I'm dropping a lot in a short period of time. And then we could take on the next phase.
I mean, you know, it sounds like you were kind of finding your way through some companies that had potential, but also had some challenges. I think it's not, especially in a sales role, uncommon to hear some of the challenges that you had. What is uncommon is what you took with all of those challenges and where you took it. So, you know, you were at that company, got demoted, then got kind of promoted again to build enterprise. You started building the enterprise. This is the company that you built it to like $30 million in like 5 years or 4 years or whatever. Which
is it was a division, company. Right? It was a division. They're like, we need to go up market, right? Go do this.
You know? Yeah. I mean, that's a huge accomplishment to grow it even in that time frame to that. So why'd you end up leaving there? Like what was the thing that made you leave?
Well, this was in 2020, you know, COVID just started to happen. But prior to that, like 2 years prior to it, like I got kind of disenfranchised, right? Or just, I don't want to say I was just not engaged anymore because like they're like, you're so good at what you do. We can't change your role. Right. Like I kind of got pigeonholed into that. And they're like, well, you could take on more. And I looked at what my boss is doing. I'm like, I really don't want my boss's job. Like, and I don't want the CEO's position. Like, and I didn't align with the culture anymore. So for a while, I was just like, well, and so many people fall into this, Brandon. I'm getting paid really well. I have this promise of equity that I not only invested in personally, but got gifted equity, right? That was going to be worth millions and millions of dollars. Bullshit, right? It was worth a fraction of what was identified once I figured that out. And so I'm like, you know what, I got to start looking at what else is out there. And I got to start actually working on a brand because every single minute outside of my family was dedicated to making things happen for that company. So I didn't really work on a personal brand or connecting with peers in the organization. And so it got to that point where it was like, you know, right around COVID, I think it was March 30th. And so I started to do that. I started to put together a course on just like some of the stuff that I learned. Started getting asked to speak on things and things along those lines. And so, but what happened is all of a sudden I got a call, or I got an invite on my calendar from the CHRO, the chief HR officer, right, with my boss and the CEO. And I'm like, oh, this is kind of weird, right? And this is March 30th. So this is after 2 weeks of shutdown. And they're like, hey, we need to have a talk. And we're like, okay. But like, you know, we see you promoting it. We see you're doing other stuff for your personal brand. And, you know, you have this course that you're working on. Like, if you want to work here, you can't do anything else. The only thing you could spend time on is this. Like, literally it was like that blunt, right? And so basically I'm like, they're like, we want you to sign this agreement saying that this is all that you're going to do. And I'm like, okay, that's kind of aggressive. I'm like, let me see the agreement, right? And so they never sent me an agreement. The next morning we were working on a deal. There was a deal that we had that had $1 million in profit in it. With a customer that we were trying to get sewed up because of everything that happened with COVID and pay terms and everything like that. So we got it nailed and I'm like, hey, great news. We got this figured out. We're good to go. And then all of a sudden I got another invite on my calendar, like literally an hour after, you know, I said, hey, we got the go ahead. We're good to go. The customer sent this doc in, right? And it was the same meeting, but they're like, yeah, we had a board meeting last night where, you know, we furloughed 75% of the company and you just can't work here anymore. And this was after 9.5 years, right? So I was like, wow, that's really interesting, right? And so from there, I'm just like, hey, I'm just going to figure it out. I've always wanted to start my own thing. That was like the perfect opportunity to do it. And it took me, I don't know, maybe about, before I started doing the consulting, maybe about 8 months, because I was doing different things, trying to figure it out. And that's kind of what led me to where I'm at today.
Yeah, one of the things that I like was really interesting was the, you know, working on a side hustle or doing other things outside of out of the primary employment. And, you know, it's a slippery slope, right? Because I can look at it from a business owner standpoint and want to make sure that the investment that I'm making in you as an employee is where I'm getting what I'm paying for, right? And you're focused on the company and helping grow the company. And there's the other side of it is like, well, people have pretty diverse lives. And I look at myself and I do a lot of different things. And, you know, I know what my attention is and where I'm focusing my time and how much time I'm giving to the companies. And it's a hard one because for me, it's like part of me wants to encourage people to build their brands, to become known. Because the bigger someone's brand is, as long as, you know, they're wanting to work at the company and helping the company, it's going to help the company because it's going to bring the right kind of attention. But there's the risk of like, what happens if the person isn't doing all the things for the company. And I think this is one of the things that I've heard a lot of people talk about over the past couple of years with the remote work is like, you know, do you know what your team is doing and how far do you go down a micromanaging path? Like, I'm not a micromanager. I like to hire people to trust and say, here's your targets, go make it happen. And let me know how I can help you. But then I run the risk of going, all right, well, what else are they doing? Are they really doing everything? Am I getting the level of productivity I need to get from them? And it's a tough one for me personally to manage because I can see both sides and I'm torn with it a lot when I find out someone on the team is working on something other than the primary work.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough, man. Cause like I've heard stories of people having 3 jobs working remotely and doing that. I think I empathize with you on exactly what you're talking about. It's really hard. I mean, you want people to be committed, you want them to be engaged. And then in this situation, like what it was is like my comp was like highly leveraged. So I was like 30% base and the rest of it was all performance based. Right. And so like, it wasn't like they were paying me massive. I mean, it was like you
had to work.
Your team does it or you don't get paid. Right. So it's like, there's some built-in motivations. I think the other thing that why I kind of led to it was because it got to the point where they're like, we want you in the office every day, right? Every single day you have to be in the office. You can't work remote, even though most of my team was remote, right? We want you in the office every single day. You need to do that. You need to commute. And it was like an hour commute each way. Like, so, which doesn't seem like a big deal, but when you factor it all in, it's 2 hours a day is a lot, right? And the other thing that was tough about it was, and this is where I think led to part of the end, was like my sister works for, she's in a leadership position at a really big healthcare system, right? And she said to me, she's like, this is right when all the COVID things were coming out. She's like, Ryan, she goes, I wouldn't like, because I was going downtown. She's like, I wouldn't do this. Like the level of preparation we're doing because of what's coming is not good. And like, you shouldn't get on a crowded plane. You shouldn't be around thousands of people like going downtown. Like it's not the time to do that. And so I made the call. This was like a Sunday night, right? And I'm like, I told my team, I'm like, hey guys, this is heating up bad. I just heard it from it. My boss is in a different time zone. I'm like, hey man, I'm telling my team to stay home and work remotely. And he was like furious about it, like furious. And I'm like, dude, this is like inside information. This isn't just like me pulling it from a shock jock on the radio. Like this is someone who's in a leadership position at like one of the largest healthcare companies in the Midwest. Right. You know, it's like, so anyways.
Well, yeah. And I mean, the managing through COVID piece was definitely challenging because before COVID, like at all of the companies I've ever run, it's like, no, we're in office. We're not doing remote. Like we would hire people that lived in different cities that we didn't have an office in. And yeah, you're remote because you physically cannot come to the office. I didn't know what I'm getting into with hiring you. But if you were within a commute to the office, the expectations were supposed to always come in. So for me, COVID in the whole remote was extremely foreign. We adapted to it very well. And then it was when we started to come out of COVID, I was like, I kind of want everyone in the office, but I'm seeing the productivity I need and I know people like it. So we initially went to a hybrid office in the United States in Austin. And then eventually we decided, you know, we actually don't have a huge presence of employees in Austin. Everyone's kind of everywhere else. So we went fully remote and, you know, there's some challenges with it, with making sure culture and team building. And there's also, you know, the risk of like productivity and can you see what people are doing? And I think that's the bigger companies you get to, it becomes much more of a huge challenge. My companies being smaller, I'm just trying to put in the right checks and balances so I can see what results are produced, engaging, you know, my opinion on how hard someone's working based off of that. Because like in your role, the way you were describing it, a 30-70 split, if you're not booking deals and making business happen, you're not getting paid. And that's like the best way to motivate like results of making sure someone's working, because it's going to be clear as day if it's happening or not. Exactly. So, well, it led to some exciting stuff though. And it led to you going down the entrepreneur journey, which is one of the things I always love and can just so relate to, obviously, from all the stuff I'm doing. What's it been like since you flipped the switch and now you're running your own show?
Yeah, man, I would say I love it. It's hard though. It's really hard. You know, it's just like, it's funny. Cause like, it's probably the single best personal development course you could ever take is to start your own business.
Right? It is so true.
So I think like it's been a beautiful experience. Like I've had people offer me jobs to like come work for them, pay me really well, but I'm determined to make it work and figure it out. And so there's times where you feel like you're on cloud nine, you're one of the smartest people in the world. And then there's times where you feel like literally like I'm one of the dumbest people in the world and nothing's working. Right. Like you have that like up and down dichotomy. Right. And like, but you know, what I would say is like, I love the process of it and I love the people I work with. Like you know, I have some great folks I work with on my team, you know, that are some contractors, you know, one of them is full time. But at the same time, customer wise, I got the other thing too, I was so bored of the space I was in, like, I just didn't want to do it. And so, now like I've been obsessed with AI probably for the last 7 months. If you look at it on a calendar wise, and not so much just like, hey, what's a prompt bomb I could find with 200 prompts and they're all useless and to provide any, you know, value. But more so like I've been obsessed with like, okay, like what's the utility of this in the business cases? Because like there's time, like here, I'll give you a really quick example. And this is why I'm building the product that I am. Like, have you used Midjourney at all?
No, I'm not.
Okay. So Midjourney is just like, have you used DALL-E or any of the graphic ones or no?
No. I played around ChatGPT, but I haven't done too much other than what my team is showing us that we're working on for our stuff. So, but I haven't doubled into it. It's pretty crazy what you can do though. The only thing I did is I had ChatGPT write a PowerPoint slide for me and give me the code that I could actually up and insert to the PowerPoint to create the graphics. That was pretty interesting.
Okay. That's cool, man. That's really cool. So here's what I would say. So why I was asking Midjourney. So Midjourney is, it's one of the graphical tools where it's like text to picture, right? And so you prompt it, creates, if you put in good prompts, really good graphical work. I absolutely suck at graphics. I am terrible. I'm not a graphics person. And so I'm like, you know what? I'm going to figure this. I'm just going to try it, figure it out, see what happens. And like, I created some pretty impressive shit in there. In less than an hour that would have taken, like I would, it just wasn't possible before. Like I would have spent days and days and days and days doing it. Right. And then ChatGPT, same thing. Like I orchestrated a workflow that would have taken me 8 hours in the past and 20 minutes to build out an entire sales org. So once I saw that, I'm like, okay, cool. Like these are real business cases. This isn't just like, you know, fancy tool stuff where you're getting it that has no utility. And I'm like, okay, I want to bring this. So with enterprise sales, I want to bring that to the mainstream. So even if you don't have a ton of experience, like you could learn 10 years of business acumen in a couple of keystrokes, right? By looking at that. And that's where my vision's at for the product that I created, because like, I mean, it took me a long time to learn and a lot of experience. And so if I could integrate that with AI, I'm like, oh, that'd be awesome for people to have that kind of Midjourney moment that I have where it's, you know, so.
Kind of where you're going with it. I'm excited to see what you do with this product that you're building is how do you take this technology and apply real business use cases that you're trying to deliver efficiency and productivity gain, but also further enhancements in whatever you can do. And I think, you know, as we go through this AI, all the rage right now, this bubble that we're kind of in, you're going to see some quality business enhancements that come from it. And I do, like, I'm a big fan of all the stuff with AI. I think it's going to change how just business works. But I think we have a little bit of like noise right now of so many people trying to figure it out to see what's going to land. So I think the people like you that are saying, I have an expertise in this, I know this space really well, how can I apply this to help drive it to the next level? You're going to probably create the most innovative and exciting things that we see. Which leads me to a question that I kind of know how you're going to answer, but I like to ask it on every show is, you know, what do you think other founders and executives should be focused on right now?
So we talked before, I was like, AI, but what I would say is for founders is integrating large language models, not outside of just your product. Most founders and CEOs I talk to, they're like, yeah, we're using that in our product. We're doing this. That's only like a tiny piece of the equation, right? And that's like going to be table stakes moving forward. Where I see an opportunity is integrated into the team and creating like centers of excellence and best practices, and then upvoting and upleveling your entire team by doing that. Like that's kind of where I see. So like I'll break it down into a real quick framework, and this applies to like I thought about it because it's kind of like the intersection. Like when we were doing managed services, we would take multiple different budgets and buckets and departments of ownership of these different pieces, and then consolidate it all into one management structure so that it was like 30 to 40% less and the level of service was exponentially higher, right? If you apply that principle to really AI in business, it's the same concepts, right? It's like, okay, like real simple breakdown, show your team what's possible. That's step one. Like here are some examples of what's possible, right? Step two is, okay, what I want you to do is over the next week, spend an hour and a half. Each person spends an hour and a half, 2 hours. And then you're going to present your best two or three workflows that you've discovered, your two or three best use cases at the team meeting. And the goal is like, we're going to keep doing this every week. And we're going to keep identifying things that are going to make our jobs easier and more enjoyable, right? And then what happens is if you do that as kind of like a continuous basis and incorporate it into the team, you're going to have people that are doing 10 times as much as they used to be able to do previously at a much better clip. Right. And so like, that's a real simple framework, but that's kind of the broad concept. And you can start with like just the large language model, like ChatGPT or Bard, because that's what 90% of the AI tools are built on.
Yeah. Smart. I love the team concept and I love the focus on getting the team engaged in it so they actually learn it as well. If nothing else, they learn it. And then hopefully they can get some productivity hacks that benefit them as they go through it. So, well, Ryan, we are out of time. So thanks for coming on and sharing your story and being open about it. And I'm excited about all the things you're up to and where you're going. I think stumbling into your entrepreneurial journey is probably the biggest thing that I took away from the conversation. And I'm excited that you're there and what you're working on.
Thanks, man. It was a blast being on the show, and appreciate you having me on.
All right. Everyone else, Cash and Burn comes out every Tuesday. So we'll see you next week.